Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, once again, my absolute sincere apologies in terms of suggesting that Shane Horgan was one rugby player who had declared himself gay. I'm completely and utterly mistaken on that, and my apologies for any embarrassment caused. In fact, as Ciara just pointed out, he married his girlfriend Emma Hodson in a celebration at Ballinter House following a weekend that was in 2017. So 4 years married, and the bride was giving some serious style goals, we're told. Shane, who's now a lawyer, might be the better known half of the couple, but indeed the article is very complimentary about him in regards to that. So utterly mistaken, and my apologies for that particular one in regards to that. Now, so most definitely not gay in terms of that. All right, let's go to a couple of keep your messages coming. And we had a little issue with our phones yesterday. I'm happy to say that they're sorted out today. So that's grand, and hopefully they'll stay sorted out. You can text or WhatsApp us on 0833 97 97 97. Email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can call us as soon as we're finished with the newspaper review on 045 898 999. Some of them messages coming in, by the way. The mink are the reason you haven't gotten a trout for ages. Well, I don't fish, but that you haven't got a trout for your tea lately. I understand that the mink do cause a lot of trouble in terms of wildlife. Yeah, the mink farm is at Vickerstown. That's the one I was at, right beside the Blue Way, someone says. It also had silver fox. I cycle by it most days. I think it's not farming mink since last year, says a listener. I'm not sure. That's the one I was referring to, I think. Yes, a person makes the point. Donal O'Cusack, absolutely elite GAA player, has come out as being gay in the last couple of years. So David Goff, that independent article, maybe is inaccurate in that sense about he being the only high-profile GAA person who has come out in the last couple of years. And another listener points out that as well, that the Cork player, yes, Donal O'Cusack, came out as being gay, and fair play to him. And someone says, massive boo-boo there, Clem. Look, we all make mistakes. It was just something I thought. I have corrected it, and none of us are perfect in relation to that, you know. Clem, that Father Ted episode Ciara mentioned was the first one to feature Graham Norton, where he danced in the tiny caravan, the best one of them all. And yes, in regards to us, by the way, covering that article on gay sports people, we're doing so with 100% support for anyone who is struggling in terms of they want to define their gender identity, they want to define their profile, but there are so many obstacles in society against coming out for gay men and women. And in terms of the sports profile, I suppose because of the macho thing that is around sport, particularly from a male perspective, we haven't had anybody other than Donal Cusack that I know of, and David Goff, the referee, who have come out across all the men's sports, while a number of women, including women international players, have indeed come out as being gay. And fair play to them. We applaud them for that as well. All right, let's get on then to matters that we're considering on the programme this morning, because according to an article that I was just looking at, in regards to the prison population, this headline emerged yesterday, was quite shocking, that up to 70% of prisoners suffer from personality disorders, in the about six times the rate in the general population, according to a senior Irish prison service psychologist. Such disorders, which range from the mildly mild to the mild to the highly disruptive, were long believed to be untreatable and simply part of offenders' personalities. However, according to the prison service's senior psychologist, Dr. Margaret McGovern, several promising treatments are now available to offenders in prisons. To comment on this, as she has done often in the past with us, I'm joined by Fianna Ní Cineda, who is Executive Director of the Irish Penal Reform Trust. Good morning, Fianna.
Morning, Clem.
Thank you. What do you make of that? I'm sure, is it a statistic that you were aware of from your own work?
Well, no, we weren't aware of that particular statistic as it related to personality disorders, and it didn't come as a surprise. We are very aware that mental illness generally among prisoners is one of the most pressing issues within Irish prisons, and that has been affirmed by international monitoring bodies, by the Office of the Inspector of Prisons, so this is not new. I mean, the prison population, it's made up of people whose mental health difficulties contributed to the offences, which is the reason they're in prison. Then there are people who have latent mental health illness that's kind of brought out by prison conditions, for example, long lockup or lack of contact with protective factors, so for example, contact with your family and children. And then you have people who develop mental health difficulties in response to the prison environment. And that's because the prison environment is high stress, often violent environment where you have to be hyper-vigilant and you've no control or agency over your environment. So this is the prison population. Now, the figures that were published in the Irish Times yesterday, I mean, for us, you know, this is hopeful, but it underlies the need and the need to resource prison psychology services, psychiatric interventions, so, for example, having sufficient spaces in appropriate therapeutic environments, such as the Central Mental Hospital, but also the need to provide all the other range, so from counselling, peer counselling, and non-pharmacological intervention.
Now, I'll talk about all of those in a minute, Fianna, because what of course this brings into play is the fact of we're assuming that this 70% of prisoners suffering from personality disorders are suffering from these conditions before they get in. So, or before they're put into prison. And of course, it begs the whole question that is incarceration an appropriate place for people who have serious mental health issues?
I mean, it is not an appropriate place for people with serious mental health issues, but it can be, of course, an appropriate place for people who have mental health difficulties. It's all about the spectrum and range. So we are very concerned at the number, the very high numbers of people with severe mental illness who continue to be detained in prison, and some of whom, 20 to 30 at any time, are on a waiting list for transfer to a central mental hospital. And those waiting lists, they can be as short as 7 days, but we know that people have waited more than a year, sometimes 2 years, before they're transferred to the Central Mental Hospital. And the clinical lead of Professor Harry Kennedy has said all of those cases are urgent. So if prioritisation, well, there's less visibility of that. So it's a matter of extreme urgency.
And that urgency, by the way, 3,875 people in prison today, so numbers on the rise. 15% of prisoners are aged 50 plus. Now, the European Commission has already issued findings on this. It says the treatment, maybe not specific to Ireland, but in general, the treatment of mentally ill prisoners is one of what they say, and I quote, that one of the most pressing issues within Irish prisons. Indeed, they are speaking about Ireland. That's according to the European Committee for the Prevention of Torture and Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. Ireland is currently not meeting its obligations to ensure adequate healthcare provision for mentally ill prisoners, and this must be addressed as a matter of extreme urgency. That's according to the Chief Inspector of Prisons. Mm-hmm. With restrictions imposed on some mentally ill prisoners, he says, amount to inhuman and degrading treatment. That's extremely concerning.
It's extremely concerning. I mean, and I think for people, you need to picture, it could be your family member who ends up in that situation in prisons, and we are failing these people. Let there be no question about it. The CPT report illustrates the particular case that I find personally very distressing to read. It was a situation of a person who was severely psychiatrically unwell, who was naked in a special observation cell at risk of self-harm to himself and to others. He was crawling around. There was urine on the floor. He was covered in feces. And the staff, and I would always say about prison staff, they are not psychiatric nurses. They should not be in a position of having to care for these people, because the people are not in an appropriate environment. But in that case, the staff were delivering food from behind a shield, so they were only opening the door a crack, as much space to put in the food from behind the shield and then close the door again.
And that smacks, all of that picture you're painting smacks of like feeding an animal. And I say that with regard, of course, highest regard for the person concerned. Absolutely. But if you have that scenario, that means that person is being detained and held as an animal would be in a cage, and it wouldn't even be appropriate for an animal in many cases. And when you add in, Fianna, that there are consistently 20 to 30 prisoners on the waiting list for transfer to the central mental hospital. Now, you have to be have serious mental health issues if you're going to be transferred to the central mental hospital. But the average waiting time is 120 days, with the shortest waiting time being 7 and the longest being 504 days. So prisoners with serious mental health issues, we're not talking now about a bit of stress or whatever else, we're talking serious mental health disorders are being left in these conditions to be treated and dealt with by people who are not qualified to deal with them, as you're saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to say, of course, there are, you know, there's prison in reach and court liaison services, so there are treatment and services coming into prisons. And it's been said, a chaplain once said to me, that the care provided by prison staff, particularly in Clover Hill Remand Prison in Dublin, which has very high rates of people with mental health issues detained there, so the care that is provided is above and beyond. But it goes back to the, you know, prison staff, they have a particular function and they are not psychiatric nursing staff, and people shouldn't be detained in prison when they should be more appropriately treated elsewhere.
But on the other side of that coin, the chief of the prisons inspectors report, the CPT, found a complete lack of structured activities for prisoners, nearly all of whom had long-term and severe mental illness. And this is relating to the so-called high support unit in Mountjoy Prison.
Yeah,
no occupational therapy, individual or group psychotherapy or recreational therapy was available, only pharmacotherapy, I presume that means medicines, the CPT recorded. In some, the prisoners wandered idly around the unit or the yard and watched television. Do you know what that reminds me of now? One flew over
the cuckoo's nest. I know what you're going to say. Yeah.
One flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah.
That wonderful film that was so evocative
was
with Jack Nicholson. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is very distressing, you know, and we really welcome that the CPT comes in and examines this, you know, and also that, you know, because a big gap here is the lack of publication of prison inspection reports by the Office of the Inspector of Prisons in Ireland. We haven't had an inspection report of a closed prison published since 2014. Now, we do know a number of short thematic inspections are with the Minister for Justice, and we have called on the Minister for Justice to publish them in a timely fashion, because we need to know what's happening now, not what happened last year or the year before, particularly as it relates to people who are vulnerable for reasons of their mental ill health. You know, and the CPT was very clear that more needs to be done for these people, but also very clear that there are too many people detained in Irish prisons who shouldn't be there at all. Now, we do, I mean, the high rates, and it has been, you know, identified that people with severe mental health issues in prison, you know, up to a third of them are homeless on committal. So there's a whole kind of cycle that we need to be looking at, the combination of disabilities, mental health illness, homeless, addictions, chaotic lives, and of course then offending behaviour somewhere in the middle, and people being detained on remand in prison instead of being detained in appropriate.
And if we take it, Fianna, that, you know, the aim of prison is to rehabilitate, and we know that doesn't happen because the services and resources are not there. And in terms of this, where people go into prison who have 70% of them with personality disorder issues, I mean, it's a win-win for society if the appropriate therapies are applied to these people and they're helped to recover and become fully functioning again.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, so the first point is that people who do not need to be in prison, whose offending is not so grave that prison is appropriate, should not be in prison at all. And people should be able to access all the mental health treatments, assessments, and if residential care is appropriate, they should be able to access in the community. No one should have to go to prison just to access that. The next thing is we need to see trauma-informed approaches across everything. We need to see big investment in community-based mental health services. We need to see investment in supported housing, so the housing first model, so that people who have additional needs, that those can be met in the community and that they don't need to go to prison to access that. We need to see a critical incident team set up within the An Garda Síochána. That's where you have mental health staff working alongside the Gardaí. We need to see diversion at all stages of the criminal justice system, before prison, in prison, post prison, and then we need to see transfer to the central mental hospital for those who are in need of it. But the most important thing is resourcing, investment in mental health, indeed, treatments and services across the board.
Just remember this, that it's in all society's interests that people get the proper treatment and therapies and rehabilitation for those who don't have mental health issues, because when they come back into society, we will all be gaining from that. Or the opposite side of the coin is, in the absence of these services, society in general, the individuals in the first place, societies, of course, in the long, society in the long run, will be the loser as well. Fianna Ní Cineada is Executive Director of the Irish Penal Reform Trust, reflecting on that report yesterday, showing that recent data revealing up to 70% of prison population has personality disorders, but the appropriate therapies, as outlined in that article by the Dr. Margaret McGovern, who is the Prison Services Senior Psychologist, those appropriate therapies are not in place as we speak. Fianna Ní Cineada, thank you very much, Fianna.
Many thanks,
Tom. And good morning for you, and thank you indeed for your time again. Now, still to come on the programme, next up we'll be talking to We Ireland about the amount of stuff being dumped, electrical waste being, well, happily, hopefully, recycled in this county in 2020. And we'll be heading to the Athy Municipal District meeting, which was held yesterday morning.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Let's move on anyway. And the good news in terms of recycling in this county, it seems that we're getting the message in regards to what's going on, because a surge in lockdown spring cleaning saw 1,269 tonnes of electrical waste collected in Kildare by the country's largest recycling scheme in 2020. And that's despite COVID and travel restrictions. Let's talk about that and more. The CEO of WEEE, otherwise known as We Ireland, is Leo Donovan. Good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. That's a pretty impressive amount, or is it? 1,269 tonnes collected in Kildare of electrical waste alone.
Yeah, it's up on last year, up about 10% on last year. And what's also very encouraging is that the amount of electrical waste that was dropped into the two local authority recycling centres in Athy and Kilcullen were up 15% last year. So there's an encouraging trend that the people in Kildare, as you said, are getting the message about the recycling of electronic waste, and that they know it's free to go back to their local authority sites, or actually bring it back to their local electrical retailer, no purchase required. So we'd really encourage everybody to keep the good practice of bringing your electrical waste and your battery waste, your portable batteries, back to your retailers for recycling.
Now, I knew I could bring the batteries back and drop them in the local supermarket or whatever else that has a box available for them. Am I correct there in hearing that you just said that I can bring a used electrical piece of equipment back to any electrical retailer without the necessity of purchasing anything from that retailer?
Yeah, the retailers have been very supportive of the take-back scheme. And since 2014, they've literally opened their doors for the public to take back electrical waste. They see it as an integral part of their overall customer service. They then all agreed that, look, without any purchase required, they would take back any electrical material.
So I'm not being flippant, but if I rock up with my 3-ton American fridge outside an electrical retailer, and I can just go in and say, hey lads, I want to drop this in, and they'll accept it.
Yeah, provided the electrical retailer does sell fridge freezers, right?
Yeah.
I thought you going up to the little electrical store which is selling lamps and so on. So if he's selling similar products and he's used to handling those products, he will take them. But when electrical retailer is selling you the product in the first place, he will take it directly from your home, provided you have your fridge freezer ready for collection. And we found that during the shutdown, a lot of people were doing a kind of a click and collect option, so they didn't necessarily get their appliances collected when they were getting new appliances delivered or collected. So we would be encouraging people that, look, if during the shutdown period, for one reason or another, they didn't have their electrical appliance recycled, if they could then just say, look, okay, I'll either go back to my retailer or go down to the local authority civic meter sites.
Now, We Ireland, your organisation, is one of the best performing recycling schemes in Europe in 2020. Countrywide, 38,724 tonnes of waste electrical items collected in total, including, and we were talking about them just a moment ago, 120,000 fridges and 200,000 TVs and monitors recovered. The scale of waste in the electrical sector is quite mind-boggling, is it not, Leo?
No, for sure. The volumes are massive. Actually, in total, we would have recycled up to around about 18.5 million different appliances. So even if you take your small appliances like your kettles and toasters, you know, we had about 15.5 million units of those coming back to us. And then even your fluorescent tubes and CFL, compact fluorescent tubes, the energy-saving bulbs, we would have had about a 2.5 million of those coming back. So, yeah, the number of units coming back to us is phenomenal. And we have a target of 65% take-back of what's been placed on the market. So the way I always say to the retailers, if you think of what the customers are walking out the door with, we need to be getting at least 65% of those units back. And that's the big call of action to the consumer, to help us to bring those back to those retailers and the local authority sites.
And when one recalls that all of this used to get dumped and discarded into waste landfill sites, and you add in 46 million used AA portable batteries.
Yeah, but if we even put the weight of the materials, the main purpose of the whole take-back of electrical appliances is to recover the actual materials that are in there. So last year we would have recovered around about 20,000 tonnes of metal. And just put that in proportion, that you could build about 3 Eiffel Towers with that amount of metal. And then the aluminium we recovered would be the equivalent of around about 65 million aluminium cans. So this is the whole purpose of recovering the materials. Last year, about 54 million tonnes of electric appliances went on the market worldwide. Okay, I think that's going to go up to around about 74 million tonnes in about 2030. So we've got to see, where is all that material going to come to make those products in the future? So that's the need to have it recycled and recovered.
Yeah. 19 million pieces of e-waste recovered in 2020. What happened when we used to repair all this stuff?
Well, that's what we're really trying to encourage now. The government has a new initiative. You might have heard about the circular economy legislation. And the idea now is to make products more durable, that we get away from this throwaway society. If we take the lamps industry, the LED lamps that we're using now are long life lamps and lighting compared to the incandescent bulbs we used to have. And then also, just, you know, in relation to repairability, we're working now with the White Goods Association as part of IBEC to implement a new training program, an apprentice program, to train up more repair engineers so that we can have better repair services out there. 91% of all call-outs for repairs end up in a successful repair.
Yeah, I think that brings us home, these kind of numbers, 19 million items, the amount of stuff that we're dumping into our bringing back to be recycled, hopefully, rather than dumping. I withdraw that last term. Don't dump this stuff, please. There is a home for it, whether it's batteries or any kind of electrical equipment in regards. And this is a day, Leo Donovan, in which the EPA has reported that Ireland will fail to meet its emissions targets by the year 2030 or thereabouts. And in 2020, the equivalent of nearly a quarter of a million tonnes of CO2 emissions were avoided by recycling electrical waste through the We Ireland scheme, as opposed to dumping it. So bringing home the value of it again.
Yeah, so the nice thing about, you know, what we call it's urban mining, so we can recover the coppers and the metals from the materials, the used materials, rather than trying to take them out of the earth. There's a lot of CO2 savings. And again, you know, the stats are quite good in relation to the CO2 savings we have by having our materials recycled. And that would be the equivalent of, you know, 4,500 tons, hectares of forestry. You know, so it is a real good contribution towards Ireland's overall contribution towards the CO2 reductions.
Indeed. 1,269 tons of electrical waste collected in Kildare by We Ireland in 2020, and 84% of all the stuff that goes into recycling can be recovered and used again. Maybe we should all think of calling the repair person again. And I wonder, of course, in the modern times that we're in, is there the case of built-in obsolescence, that the turnover is so quick? There was a time when we kept the old television for 40 years. Mine is showing pink pictures at the moment, and it amazes a lot of people, but I'm happy with it. Everybody might be pink, but it'll do me for the moment. But here's the big message, folks. Do not dump this stuff. Bring it back to your electrical provider if they deal in that specific piece of equipment, and contribute to saving the environment and helping all around. Very, very interesting, I have to say. CEO of We Ireland, Leo Donovan. Thank you for that, Leo.
Thank you very much.
Very interesting, and it's a message that I certainly hope that we can all get out to everybody loud and clear in regards to how we must help and save our environment. Mark Lee is a Labour councillor in the Athy Municipal District. They met yesterday morning. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Clem.
Thank you for joining us. Mark, you had four motions in relation to the meeting yesterday morning. Let's begin with a look of those now, as soon as I can, of course, find it and bring it up. Will you tell me about your first motion first, Mark, will you please?
The first motion, Clem,
was motion number 7, yeah.
Yeah, 14, I think.
Hold on a second now, because I have it here in relation to that. Sorry about that, I'm just trying to change around on various things in regards to this. Okay, let's jump up to, Ivan Keatley's I was looking at there, I beg your pardon. Mark, your first motion is number 14, and that on the clore is that the council consider developing the old Barrow path from Athy to Monastereven on the Kildare side into a blue way to complement the blue way on the opposite bank, creating what you say would be a 47 kilometre continuous blue way around waterways in South and West Kildare.
There was an old towpath there, I'd say in the 1800s, a man called Clifford Reid, you'd know him well.
I know Clifford Reid well, yeah.
Was telling me about it one day, and we just clicked together the idea about a blue way to complement the new blue way that's coming to Athy next year, Clem, hopefully by the end of the summer of 2022.
Mark, with this old blue way is that the council say it's in private ownership.
Yeah, well, it is in private ownership. It does present a challenge, but listen, I'm sure the original Blue Way, when it came up, presented a challenge to Clem.
Yeah, well, the council say they'll investigate if it is in private ownership, and if not, they'll see and engage with Waterways Ireland. So you'd be hopeful that something might come out of that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to your next motion in regards to where exactly, by the way, is that private that towpath that's so old again, Mark?
It's on the Kildare bank of the Kildare side of the River Barrow, Clem. It would go from Monastereven to Athy. Now, over the years, I can imagine that different farmers, etc., have been working away the land there, and a lot of it has probably turned into farmland, Clem. But there's a new thing there coming from the Department of Environment about riparian margins on farmland. Coming right up to the riverbank.
Yeah, I know of one right of way that around the tide that exists that now is effectively fenced off as farmland. So, and there is something in law, as I understand it, that if a right of way is not used on a continuous basis over a set period of time, it can be reclaimed for private ownership. But we'll investigate that maybe further. The council say that regards to, you had a question in regards to providing bins in the old cemetery in Athy, and the council said they already provide 7 wheelie bins at the old St. Michael's Cemetery in Athy, which are emptied on a regular basis. What about derelict buildings in Castle Dermot? Mark, you had a question on that too.
With the good feeling around the new playground being opened this month, Clem, in Castle Dermot, a group from Castle Dermot contacted me in relation to a few derelict buildings. Now, I have to pinpoint exactly what it is, what buildings they are.
All right. They'll come back to you on that. And you asked that the council allow the South Kildare Beekeeping Association set bait hives to trap swarming bees on suitable council lands in the municipal district during the months April to July, but the council say further details are required.
I mean, within the last week, in and around Athy, 3 swarms of bees have been trapped then this is the time of the year for it. My original motion was probably a bit naive, to be honest with you. I just thought the idea that we could have more hives on council lands, etc., around there. But unfortunately, insurers and that don't like the idea of beehives.
No, they don't. And in the presence of people who mightn't be expert in dealing with beehives, it could be highly dangerous indeed. Okay, Mark, thank you for that. That's Labour Councillor Mark Lee on four motions that he brought to yesterday morning's meeting of the Athy Municipal District. We'll be hearing from Councillor Ivan Keatley in the second hour, and also we'll be hearing from Councillor Joe Neville of the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District.